Do you know me? Do you know what I am? Do you want to know my name?
Tell me.
This is what I am called. I am called Glad of War, Grim Raider, and Third. I am One Eye. I am also called Highest and True Gesser. I am Grimnir and the Hooded One. I am Allfather, Gondlir, One Bearer. I have as many names as there are winds, as many titles as there are ways to die. My ravens are Yugin and Moon in thought and memory. My wolves are Feiki and Geiri. My horse is the gallows. I am Odin!
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jenny.
And I am Mr. Blog.
And this is American Godcast episode 9. It's the last one. It's the season finale.
Yeah. For whatever reason, it felt like it really like jumped out at me. I didn't expect it to be over so soon. I'm kind of bummed out.
Yeah.
It's a really quick. Rich series, which is why, you know, they shoved a lot into 8 episodes.
It really did. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where the story actually doesn't move that much because there's so many different parts of it. But it's so, yeah, like you said, rich in so many different ways. Textually, visually, the performances. It's just a pleasure to have podcasted on this show. But we decided not to do it next season. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I'm like, wait, what?
I'm totally kidding.
It's been a lot of fun doing this with you guys. I've really, really enjoyed it. I think, you know, we brought up early on, Jason, this is the first time you and I have actually done something regularly together. And it's been great. I loved it. And Jenny, I've always loved both of your banter back and forth. I think we brought it. And although we never talk about our iTunes reviews, I did love one that we just got that basically said it was like listening to old friends. And, I think that about nails it right on the head. I like it.
That's nice. Yeah, I saw that. We got a new one.
Oh, good. So, like, we're their old friends. So maybe that person's, like, our old friend. If we could listen to them back.
Yeah, that was from Mark Licata. No, I'm just kidding. He's an old friend of ours. So we have mimosas here today because they seem kind of Eastery, even though it's 9 p.m. And this actually would have been okay when we recorded at 9 a.m. the other day because it's a mimosa. But anyway.
Hey.
And I've got my red wine because as per usual, it's 9 p.m.
It's morning somewhere on Earth.
All right, let's get into this episode. This episode was...
Things happened!
Yeah, it was a big one. It was a big one.
A lot of things happened.
It's our top 3 highlights for season 1, episode 8, Come to Jesus. Jenny, what did you think of this episode? I haven't talked to you about it at all.
Like overall or start with the top 3 highlights?
Overall.
I liked it. I liked it a lot compared to... a lot of the other episodes, there's just so much in it. To be honest, I'm not sure as a season finale how successful it was in terms of a bang, but it was, I don't know, it was a good episode. It was definitely not what I would expect people to have filmed as a season finale on a show that was not quite yet renewed for season 2 yet. So that was pretty ballsy.
You know why I felt like it was a good marker in the story? Because, you know, as a finale, it wasn't so much an end point, you know, but as we know, they're adapting a novel and they're about a third of the way in, I guess. But the way it was a marker is we've been sort of seeing Wednesday and all the other old gods as kind of pathetic because they, you know, they've stressed over and over again that these gods exist only as a result of people's belief in them. But Wednesday said something, he was talking about how, you know, the gods exist because people believe in them, but the gods are also, they make things happen. And this was a total assertion of their power. He killed a bunch of people with his lightning, and then, you know, he prodded Ostara, aka Easter, to make all the crops fail and everything. And so that was their first like real stake in the ground. Look, we are powerful. That's what the old, I'm totally getting into, but I just, what Jenny said about the finale stoked this. It's like, this was a stake in the ground for them. Like, look, we still are powerful. And we actually have, we're forces of nature here. And we have a chip that we can use in this war, you know? So I felt like that was a pretty big deal.
I mean, it wasn't a traditional season finale because it was a finale that was a beginning. It was like the war has kicked off, you know?
Right,
yeah.
You know,
and it makes you want to know what's going to happen next, or me anyway.
Yeah.
Which I think that in itself actually makes it a great finale in that it really, it finally drew everybody together. It really wrapped up a lot of open-ended questions that we had, left plenty there still to mull over and to play around with. And you're right. It is a beginning, and I think it's wonderful the way they did this, and I think they did a great job of character development over the season, so that we have some stake in each and every party in this entire little dance going on, and I'm really eager to see where it goes from here.
It addressed something that I've been wondering, like, what do these old gods, do they still do stuff? We've seen Anubis do things regarding death, but, you know, seeing Wednesday assert his power like that was really awesome. And I found the quote. He says, people create gods when they wonder why things happen. Want to know why things happen? Because gods make them happen. Want to know how to make good things happen? Be good to your god.
Well, and even that's echoed in the whole thing between Mad Sweeney and Laura. About, the gods fuck with us. That's what they do.
Which you see in all the stories.
Exactly.
It's a virtuous or vicious circle, however you want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, like, why the gods are cruel. I sort of got a better understanding in this episode. They had a good angle on it, because if everything just goes fine, then the people have no reason to pray. So you need to take away something and get them asking for it back. So
yeah, exactly.
So what, how, I mean, it sounds like you really liked it, Eric.
Oh, I absolutely did. I thought it was fantastic. And I am eager to talk about our tops and all that. I mean, I am eager to get into it. I want to hear what you guys thought about some of these specifics that I enjoyed it. I thought it was well paced. It worked well for me. It had
it was fun.
A little extra oomph. It was fun. Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Yeah.
And visually,
I really liked how it was sort of the first third or so was Bilquis centered, and that was sexy and dark and in tone too, in visual tone. It was dark. And then the second half was all bright and airy and colorful, and it was a nice contrast to move between those two segments. Why don't you go first, Eric?
All right, sure. My number three, which isn't even really about the episode itself, but where it launches us. And my big question is, how will belief change Shadow? And how will that belief change his relationship with Wednesday and Laura? And of course, that whole little, I don't know what you want to call it, a love triangle. It's not quite a love triangle, but between, you know, Wednesday, Laura, and Shadow. This is now going to be a very difficult sort of thing to deal with. And I can't wait to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Like, but if because Shadow has this belief. He started off saying he doesn't think he believes in anything, but then his eyes were open. So what if he finds out that Wednesday orchestrated all of that turmoil in his life, including the death of his wife?
Exactly. So I can't wait to see how that plays out. But also, we've now hit that point where we can say, okay, finally, Shadow's on board. He knows what the hell's going on, because it was getting a little bit unbelievable that he would still doubt all of this. You know,
he said it was maybe it was a vivid dream, but I'm not even sure I believe that. It's like,
I heard that exactly. I'm like, come on, dude, you know what's going on. So, but at least now that's done. He obviously now knows what's going on.
I loved when Jesus said something about, you know, well, you know, you can basically follow the path of your senses. You know, that's the best you can do, which to me, coming from Jesus, sounded a little weird, because Jesus typically is about having faith in things that you can't see. But I like that.
Maybe
sentiment.
Not that Jesus. Yeah, there were a lot of different Jesuses.
Right. Some other Jesus might argue. I want to see how the Jesuses start arguing.
Oh, I think it would be amazing. It would be peaceful and beautiful.
My favorite Jesus moment is when he's sitting on the pool of water and drops his drink in and he goes, God damn it. God damn it.
I don't know if Jesus is, you know, arguing is actually that peaceful if you think of the Reformation and Protestants versus the Catholics.
Those don't get me started on...
Those are followers, not necessarily and probably fake.
I mean, I'm just saying those Jesuses were all very getting along with each other. It was a nice garden party, of course.
I think Mr. World's point was he said something about, you know, you do better when there's war, but we don't want any war. That was really interesting to me to think about that these old gods probably thrive more on war, but the new gods are more like opiates. You know, they're more distractions to keep everybody docile.
Well, I don't know. I took that to mean more like he was saying the war between them. Because I think media does pretty well when there's a war going on, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
They were pushing it with Odin, you know, his whole little satellite system of killing North Korea.
Yeah, these days, we practically don't even pay that much attention to wars. Afghanistan is still going on. It's never in the news. You know?
Where? What?
I mean, I think you're right to an extent, but less and less as time goes on.
Well, I mean, I do think the old gods thrive on instability, right? Just having unpredictability and stability in your life. And so you kind of pray to something to try to like make things not so bad.
I guess you're right.
And then with the new gods, I mean...
No, I mean, the new gods are like that, too. If the new gods are a lot about escapism, that means that you need something to escape.
Yeah.
And they all need sacrifice.
That's what they all have in common.
Yep.
Jenny?
My number three was that the war has started, Shadow believes that, you know, it's kind of like it's finally shifted into a higher gear or just a different tone, a different story. I mean, like, this was an arc of discovery for this season. So the next season is going to be an arc of conflict, you know, war, you know. So it's just nice to kind of change because I think it was, you know, it was the right length of time for a season for what it was doing. And now it's, you know, I'm looking forward to just a different tone.
Another thing interesting to me about this season is they took a couple of detours with, Laura, you know, episode 4 showing her story, and then this last episode. Well, I guess it wasn't Laura; it was Essie and Laura too. I've always wanted not to need a show to hurry up and get through the plot and make sure the plot was advanced. If something is entertaining, then I'm happy, you know. Or if it's thought provoking or whatever. So there, even though there were only 8 episodes, there were a couple episodes where you might argue that the main story was languishing, but I don't care.
Okay. I mean, I personally thought the Wednesday Shadow one was getting a little kind of like, all right, repetitive. They're wandering from God to God and Shadow's going, what is going on? You know, so, you know, I'm kind of happy it's kind of kicked into some.
Yeah. Oh, no, me too.
Even though the gear is war and, you know, just looking at how this war started and I'm just kind of like, such a bullheaded, stupid war. Look at these egotists, basically. Just, I mean, like, why is this war starting? This is war starting because Wednesday and Easter can't freaking accept, like, being a god under modern terms. It has to be the old terms, the way they like to be. Oh, I want to be worshipped this way, not that way. I mean, it just seems so,
I don't know,
selfish Easter, and picky.
I don't agree. Like, Easter was degrading.
It's degrading.
Neutral. Yeah.
Well, no, she wasn't neutral, was she?
I love Easter, man. I love bunnies.
Yeah, but you've never even heard of Astora before this. That's my point. That you're not celebrating Easter in worship of this woman. She's kind of glomming on now, and she really has sort of been forgotten, even though she's got this great power.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because when, you know, after this episode was Silicon Valley on HBO, and on Silicon Valley, they had a code snap, right? Kind of like as if Easter would to take spring away and kill some crops and make it cold again, right? Did they say like, oh, code snap, crops, nature. They were like, oh no, we need more server space. I mean, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of funny
you
that
want to be loved for the right reason. It's like if Nico came to you and was like, "Mom, I love you because you let me watch TV, and that's the only reason I love you, and that's it." You'd be like,
"Accept it." No, really, accept it.
Yeah, accept it.
Accept any love you can get. That's all I'm telling right. you.
And I'm just kind of like,
as the parent of teenagers, I'm going to tell you,
human being, and I always knew I was going to be effed, fucked the minute you were born. So,
oh dear.
But yeah, but and that, whatever. It's a war. I personally think the vast majority of wars are for stupid, selfish, egotistical reasons, and this is no mm-hmm. different. And so it's a believable war, of course. You know, yeah. Of course they would do that. But it also makes none of the sides very sympathetic, like most wars.
I know. I mean, it seems like in wars you could probably find a group of people who are in power and who are acting like they were in a playground fight, but they just happen to have all these resources under them.
But also, mm-hmm. we're dealing with gods that I think almost every single mythology, when it comes to gods, they're pretty much insecure and prideful and bitter and nasty. And they're all so many things. So this just kind of fits with their personality. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that contradicts.
Well, also, like, who's in this war? I find it interesting. Okay, so we know
they are totally egotistical. I'm agreeing 100%.
Okay, so there's new gods, right? And then there's the old gods. But where's Jesus? You know, he's at this party. What was his reaction to all of this? Is he like Jesus?
He seemed kind of oblivious.
Yeah, I think he's just like wandered off.
Yeah. I think he's sort of like, you know, Justin Bieber. He's like got so much adulation that he's just like, oh, whatever, you guys.
Yeah, I think I think media and the new gods they feed off of him as well as the old gods feed off of him. I think everybody's happy with Jesus.
Right.
That might be why you don't see the big ones the most, is because, like, hey, they're getting fed on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems right.
And that seems to be a theme, right? Like Vulcan saying, and even Astara saying in this one, that I'm not starving. You mm-hmm. know, I'm fine. I'm not starving.
I think Vulcan and Astara are the same, or they're very similar, that they have found a way with the help of the new gods of adapting to the modern times.
And now we know Bilquis as well.
Bilquis as well.
Know yeah. About her, yeah.
Because of Tinder. And that leads into my number three, is the Bilquis sequence. I loved seeing her in
her
full
it?
Power. I guess she's Bathsheba, who was a historical and possibly not real figure who consorted with kings and met King Solomon and became his partner and his equal, and is from Yemen. And so this temple of hers, where she's having this awesome Burning Man party with all these beautiful people,
very cosmopolitan for Yemen, and
then she
BC.
Like basically with her sexual power decimates them all, which is kind of sad, but that's the thing about Bilquis.
I love that scene. That was great.
As much as like, even like she goes her what was it? Her afro, something resolved into her afro. It was a big globe or something. Anyway,
well, she accepted. Like the looks changed, the hairstyles changed, the clothes changed, but
and
her lust never did, or whatever. Not lust, but whatever it was.
Suddenly, she's in 1979 Tehran, and she's working the disco, and that's the year of the Iranian Revolution
yeah.
mm-hmm. where the Islamic government took over, theocratic government, mm-hmm. In a violent coup, and that's why all the angry men busted in. And I loved how they were framing it, how some men, you know, every woman has this power of birth and creation, and some men will get down on their knees for it, but it'll make other men angry. And that rings so true in the world.
Yeah
And then she ends up in the United States because a bunch of people left. And I felt like maybe, you know how in all these Coming to America stories so far, there's usually a real person that comes to America and they're bringing the God with mm-hmm. them. So maybe this woman that she flirted with in the disco.
I mean, you see her. You see her in the plane, you see her in the hospital bed. So
yeah. Yes. And then she ends up with AIDS, I think.
The lady. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but in the hospital, the little digital clock said 19:88 was
aww.
The year. You know?
Yeah, that was the height of
that.
The epidemic.
And also there was a, on her shoes later on, I believe it said 2013.
Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
This show's too creative. Come on, you guys.
It's there are so many little things that are just... I mean, and well, I can't wait for the rewatch on this, tell you the truth.
Way of saying the date without being some boring super title.
No,
right?
It's great.
Totally. Yeah. It's fantastic. Love and that, I thought, really, I have to agree with you totally that that Bilquis, the entire Bilquis sequence was just beautifully done. I really, I love the little...
It was like a song or a music video or something, right. The pacing of it.
It reminded me of Westworld. That one scene of Westworld, there was a big orgy happening. It kind of, I had that same sort of sense. Yeah, everything about it. I just Tehran. It was beautiful. I thought that woman was beautiful. That Bilk was with, and it was erotic, and there was.
And
a
she did the Mile High sensual, Club.
She, over and over. I guess that's her.
They
her
just
way
reference
of doing
a
it.
Lot of pop culture without being obvious, and yeah. It's just yeah. Very smoothly done.
You go on a little journey there.
It really was, but so it was smooth. Also. It was sensual, and I did feel it was kind of erotic, mm-hmm. Which is absolutely perfect for her story. And I thought it, I love that they managed to be able to kind of switch the tone and switch the mood in the show to where you can have something really gross like Dead Wife at the same time as, I mean, she's looking bad now.
Yeah,
her teeth
and
are getting
the
all
flies
black.
Are getting louder.
Flies are getting louder, and then you have the same episode as Bilquis. It's wonderful.
But the thing about Bilquis, as attractive and alluring as that whole sequence was, most of it anyway, I couldn't forget that she's basically a serial murderer. You know, she's just like the other gods. She's cruel and demands sacrifice, even worse.
Hungry.
Because, yeah, because the people she's getting the sacrifice from, they're not, they don't even know what's coming. I mean, it seems like the whole act itself is orgasmic for them, so like Mr. Nancy says, maybe not such a bad way to go,
right?
But still,
right.
Yeah, not the worst way to go.
Yeah, that's right. And he was funny too. He's, I got a great fucking story for you, or whatever.
Oh, I loved the Mr. Nancy. I really did enjoy this episode. I do have to say,
once upon a time there was a fucking queen.
You know, it didn't dawn on me until this episode that he's a tailor, weaver,
which is perfect.
You know, yeah. Spider weaver. I mean, I love all. I, as somebody who is kind of afraid of spiders, that scene bugged me out in many different ways, and I'm actually contorting right now as I'm thinking about it. But it was cool, and it really worked. And I was just like, oh, I knew exactly who was going to be there the moment we saw those spiders. So that was
It's perfect for him because he's a tailor and he's a spider and a weaver and he's really well dressed.
Oh, he's a sharp motherfucker. I loved it. Yeah. My number two, we really have talked about it a bit already, but best Easter party ever. Oh my God. A party with Astara and all the Jesuses was just so fucking cool. I got such a kick out of, you know, we talked about already the Jesus fun. Jeremy Davies. Love that guy, and seeing him again as kind of the, I don't know, Jeffrey Hunter Jesus we might expect to see, but then there's all these different ones. One guy with the jelly beans falling out of
his
stigmata.
In
his hand, yeah, which is hilarious. But of course, Kristen Chenoweth as Astara, I love her so much. She shows up in other Brian Fuller things, so they're obviously friends. And what I really enjoy about it is she is very much a very, very much practicing Christian. And the fact that she did this episode just makes me so happy. She was just funny and endearing, and everything about the way she switches from there's a dead girl in my house, you know, to flirting with Shadow, and everything about that party was just wonderful. I got it. It was loved it.
So I agree, and it made me want to be there, and even the Jesuses all around was kind of fun. Like, we should have an Easter party and invite people to dress up like Jesus.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah.
San Francisco has the Hunky Jesus contest every Easter.
Yeah.
Don't they have some kind of a Santa, Hunky Santa? I don't know.
Or SantaCon.
SantaCon.
Well, SantaCon's international
all
at
over.
This point.
Yeah.
So I looked up Astara. She's a Germanic goddess who, by way of the Germanic month bearing her name, Eistermonop or something like that, is the namesake of the festival of Easter in some languages. Pagan Anglo-Saxons held feast in Ostara's honor, but that tradition died out, replaced by, you know, the celebration of the resurrection of Jesus. But Christian teachers tolerated the name and applied it to one of their own grandest anniversaries. And Ostara seems to have been the divinity of radiant dawn, of upspringing light, a spectacle that brings joy and blessing, whose meaning could be easily adapted by the resurrection day of Christian God.
And the fact that they, the way the story then kind of bends that to make it her like a commercial sellout working with the new gods.
Commercial sellout.
With all of the Easter, you know, the bunnies and all those bunnies on the road. What the fuck was up with Wednesday just
running? Because that's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, yeah, it's just a message.
Well, he was trying to tell her, like, this is lame, man. I knew you back when you were harvest goddess. Spring
goddess.
Fuck
these bunnies.
You know, that makes me feel so much better. Thank you. I like that. That is that is very cool.
Okay, my number two. I thought it was kind of interesting how they pointed out that Easter owes Mad Sweeney something for something.
Something.
So yeah. Something happened. There's some history between them, which I'd love to know about. And basically just having, seeing her express her power. I mean, I was first quite puzzled by the power. I was like, wait, I thought she makes things bloom. She's doing the opposite.
Thank you. I was wondering the same thing.
She has control over it.
Why is she doing that? I thought she was going to make things go like mad crazy. You know, things would like overgrow and bunnies would like, I don't know. There would be a plague of bunnies upon the land.
Odin kind of clarifies what that's about.
But no, she went on strike, I guess.
Yeah, that's
what Odin said is, you know, tell the non-believers and the believers we've taken spring. They can have it back when they pray for it. That was the point.
And she looks so happy about that.
Yeah. So how are they going to get the message out that to get spring back, you're supposed to pray to Ostara? I mean, are you going to need media perchance? Huh?
And he's actually saying to them, he's telling the new gods, tell these people that's what they need to do. Why would they help them?
It's a little bitch fight.
They need their own PR. Right?
They're all slapping each other right now.
By the way, did you love Technical Boy's grill or what?
Yeah, everything about him. I like how he always changes his style to some degree. Like his hair was pretty funky this time.
Well, but he had to get new teeth because media knocked him out.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, it's funny. Okay, can I do my number two? So, Laura, we talked about her a little bit. She's looking worse and worse. She's pale. Her skin is coarse. She's vomiting maggots.
Gross.
You know, she's talking about coldness to her bone and emptiness and pain. And all of a sudden, you know, just seeing that and hearing her talk about it, I'm like, yeah, I guess I would be in a bitchy mood too if this was going on. Like, she has no patience for anything, you know, or anybody. She's got nothing to lose. And so I kind of felt like I understood her attitude a little bit more in this episode.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that not only Wednesday not only hired Mad Sweeney to kill her, but also to go to a bar a few hours later and beat up Shadow. It's like pretty nasty 1-2 punch there. The interesting thing about that is him going to that bar is what led to Laura coming back to life, because that's when he, for some stupid reason, gave up his lucky coin.
Good point.
And then he gets the lucky coin back, but has some kind of a newfound sympathy for her. So he's still in this predicament where, and then there was another thing where he was talking to Easter, and I guess he didn't realize that she can't bring back somebody who's been killed by God. So he's like, fuck. But she said, you know, well, someone who's been dead because of a God can't be resurrected, at least not by my hand. So that,
yeah, I was wondering, there's so many Jesuses around.
What? Yeah, just ask a few of those. It made me, yeah, totally. I would have said, when she said that, I would have said, oh, okay, do you know who I should go to? Can I have a referral or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That dude sitting on the water, perhaps? Maybe.
I want her to come back. I really do. I want her to come back to life. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't look like she's going to last another season at this rate. I mean, she's really falling apart.
She is going, yeah. I don't want to see. You know, one of my favorite movies of all time, American Werewolf in London. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Where, no? Oh, it's a great movie. Where Jack, one of the buddies, is his ghost keeps reappearing to the guy who's become a werewolf. And as the movie progresses, he's deteriorating. And eventually he's all green and his eyeballs. It's great.
Yeah, see that movie. Had some gross body morphing scenes. Oh, in it.
That's when I fell in love with Fangoria, and I fell in love with Rick Baker, who did all the practical effects. Oh, wonderful, wonderful movie!
I just had one note. My favorite line of Easter's is, "I don't resurrect; I re-life. Life has always been my gift to re-gift."
That's nice.
That was cute.
Yeah.
Number one,
Eric. Number one.
Oh, we've talked about this quite a bit, but The Gods Unleashed. That entire end sequence with Wednesday just coming clean about who he is and the way he just kills those blank-faced, whatever you want to call them, you know, I mean, and that him saying, you know, this sacrifice is for you. Seeing Easter's or Astara's power, all of that was just so cool. It's like all the cards were laid out. This is what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty surprised how powerful Woden is. I mean, I don't know anyone who has worshipped Woden all across the U.S. in the past 40 years. But, you know, someone must be, because he has enough to bring forth some lightning to kill Mr. World.
My grandfather used to talk a lot about the Norse gods and all that because he was Norwegian. So my Norwegian family in South Dakota, I'm sure that still comes up a bit. And now you've got the Marvel the Marvel universe with Thor.
Is that guy? He's kind of like an ad. Is he around much? Is
Odin?
Yeah.
He's around. Yeah.
He is around? Okay. I wasn't sure if he's an absent dad or something like that.
No, he does.
Oh, no. He's around.
Okay.
Fucks with people all the time.
Yeah. Neil Gaiman himself has helped bring Odin and Thor to light. He just wrote a book on Norse mythology. So, you know, and I think he's ran. Actually, Woden's even in The Wicked and the Divine, one of the comic books that we cover on Under the Comic Covers. There is a Woden.
Did you have any more on that?
No, I mean, what more is there to say? I thought that was just an incredible sequence. I thought it was cool the way he revealed himself to Shadow. And I enjoyed Astara's power that we've already talked a bit about. I thought it was confusing at first as to what's happening. But once we started seeing all the plants sucking down into the ground and the petals going onto her face and all that neat shit, I just thought it was great.
It's a good thing. Really enjoyed it. You know, Shadow was like, oh, Woden, instead of like, who?
Who?
He spent, you know, 3 years in prison. He must have done some reading, so that's a good thing.
He did a lot, right? Yeah.
And my number one is just how visually awesome this episode was. I mean, I really liked it.
Yeah.
In a series that's been visually awesome, this one stood out.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, very much so.
This was just so rich. And I'm a sucker for rich tapestry-like kind of visuals. And, you know, just scene after scene. First, the Bilquist sequence, you know, that was a very nicely done architecture for the temple and for the orgy, and when the crown came out of that guy's grew into the guy's head. I thought that was beautifully done. Also, everybody was quite beautiful in that scene. A lot of nice muscles and stuff. And then Mr. Nancy, you know, beautiful threads. You know, everybody was dressed really nicely. Yeah. I like his style. I think Mr. Nancy is quite beautiful himself. His beautiful studio, his beautiful clothes, his beautiful presence, his beautiful way of telling a good story.
My favorite of his story was when they showed the whole kind of orgiastic sequence. It wasn't really an orgy, though. It was just kind of dancing. but naked, and he was like, it was good fucking times.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and just the beauty of Easter's estate, all of the different Jesuses wandering about with their halos, and, you know, lovely sunlit
baby Jesus. I love little sweet baby Jesus.
A perfect party with great weather.
I like how the Jesuses and other gods occasionally it looks like they have a halo around because they're standing in front of a light or something. But that's great.
Yeah, it was a great touch. So I just thought the visuals were just beautifully done. And I just, it was richer than candy. It was like steak. It was like just watching visual steak. Mm-hmm. Sorry if you're a vegetarian.
And I'm thinking about like lush visuals. Gone with the Wind was certainly a movie with a lot of lush visuals, and it was wonderful that media would show up looking. I believe that was supposed to be Vivian Leigh from Gone with the Wind.
I thought it was Jackie O.
I couldn't really place it. Jackie O has the pillbox, and this was more of a sort of frilly hat. But okay. It wasn't a long dress a la Gone with the Wind either. It was kind of a short, modern Easter dress.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But she was
who that was supposed to be.
She was dressed for an Easter party.
I'm sure it was supposed to be somebody.
But it might be, yeah.
Some of our listeners are screaming it right now.
Yeah, probably. And I'm thinking Vivian Leigh from Scarlett O'Hara.
She kind of have a southern thing going on, right?
Yeah.
But they're in Kentucky, aren't they?
They are in Kentucky. So. Yeah, not Georgia.
I'm surprised they didn't have like big, enormous, crazy hats then, like Kentucky Derby style.
And I love that now we know why everybody was going to Kentucky.
For a party. Easter party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's one thing we forgot to mention about Bilquis is she's now headed to
Wisconsin.
House on the Rock.
Sexy, sexy Wisconsin. Yeah.
And she's there pretty much. So maybe the gods are all converging now. So we won't have to wait another two seasons.
Well, maybe season two won't be a war. It's going to be a negotiation.
I don't know. We know the series is
five seasons, right?
I mean, it's been renewed for season two.
Right.
That's good. That's all I care about, that there will be one.
Yes, there will be.
Don't want to ask too much. But I have to say, though, you know, Bilquis pulling her plane trick on a bus doesn't work quite as well on a bus.
I know. It seemed a little less.
You're like, I want to join the Mile High Club. No one wants to join the 2-3 foot club. You know, the Greyhound 3 foot high bus. Off the ground.
I mean, I just think of a story that my friend's mother said when she was on a bus and it stopped suddenly and somebody fell out of that bathroom with like toilet paper hanging off of him. Okay, my turn?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I loved when media came in and kind of blew it, actually. I think she was there trying to cement her relationship with Ostara. Mm-hmm. But instead, she sort of made her aware of, resent that she owed her. She made Ostara resent that she owed media. But when she said, Saint Nick took the same deal you did, the only reason why you're relevant today is because Easter is a Christian holiday. It's religious Darwinism, adapt and survive. What you and I have achieved together is no small feat now that we're living in an atheist world. I just thought it was funny to think of Santa Claus like having to take this deal. But more than that, my point is that it made her go, get away from me. I don't want to be under your thumb like this and, you know, be, like I said before, degraded.
Yeah.
And she kept saying things like, we control the story and stuff like that. So... it's like, get off me, bitch.
Okay. Well, I personally lost a little respect for Easter because I think Easter's perfectly fine as it is. And you want your old-fashioned spring, you know, whatever, holiday. I don't know. I just, you know, you're just, it's just too demanding. It's just like this old geezer. Everything has to be at their own terms and nothing can change. And, you know, that's just me, though. I'm sure she would smite me down if she had the chance.
You know, I'm sitting here trying to think of sort of rebuttal.
And I clutch a stuffed rabbit.
Lately, I keep thinking I so desperately need to go on a hike somewhere, go on some nice long trip out into the woods, And Jenny, you actually do get out, you know, to caves and these kinds of things. And I would hate to think of not being able to have that outlet and have it all be tech and all be this. I'm spring is something I'm like, I don't know, that's a special thing. And as somebody without a religion, when Easter comes around, I feel a little guilty because I'm like, well, I don't care about the religious part of it, but the spring part I'm kind of down with. So,
but we live in California. We really have no seasons here.
Well, this year, the grass turned, you know, my garden is going insane. We have the entire state has wildflowers that are blooming like crazy. So when the hills go from green to brown, suddenly we get explosions of colors, you know. Our streams are finally running because we got water, you know.
And drowning people, yes.
Has there been some drownings?
Sorry, I'm just going to play devil's advocate here.
Jenny admires sellouts, so that we've got that established. Let's move on.
I love stuffed animals. Let's go. I love chocolate eggs. I like it when they sell those, you know, chocolate covered peanut butter eggs every year.
Yeah, I'm not a sugar guy.
I like to blow up marshmallow peeps in the microwave until they get really big and weird looking.
Really?
Yeah.
You've done that before? Okay, should we go on to notes?
Yes.
Eric, you have any?
My very few this time, really. We covered a lot of them. Of course, Mr. Nancy, I do love his line that he used in the episode we saw him before. Angry gets things done. I love that line. I think it's fantastic. What? But that's really about it for my notes.
One thing I didn't quite get about Mr. Nancy, you know, he was telling that story and it seemed like, you know, he said the moral is everyone needs a queen. And that was within the context of, you know, Mr. Wednesday killed Vulcan and the new gods are not going to be happy about that. So I guess it sort of suggests that he actually did kill Vulcan, by the way. But what does that have to do with getting a queen?
All I could think of is like maybe a chess game in which they got a queen and now you need a queen up here. Okay. On this side. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Even though Bilquist did not seem to be the most willing of queens for that side.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like that was a bit of a stretch, unless there's something we're not getting about that.
Just thinking a little branch from what you're saying there. I love that Odin or Wednesday has always said straight up that he's a liar. And I love the scene where he's talking about how to Astara, how they killed Vulcan. You know, how he twisted that whole thing around.
And Shadow's looking at him like, what are you saying?
Exactly. But I love it. He's never once said he's anything but a liar.
Right. He's been honest about that.
Yeah.
I thought it was an abrupt transition when Mr. Nancy handed Shadow a coat, says, try that on for size. And then the very next scene, Shadow's busting through a wall of skulls. And he climbs up the skulls into this cosmic vision and sees the big tree that's been haunting him. And then the big white buffalo comes and doesn't say believe, but I thought maybe he would. I guess that's so too. Yeah, I mean, it's about the belief, but what was that?
It was a kind of a crazy transition.
Yeah.
I could, you know, maybe they're just like, well, let's just transition.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I think that really was it. Yeah. He's in a dream. This is going to reiterate Orchard of Bones. That was the title of the first episode, I think, right? Thematically, it's going to bring it up again. Buffalo God.
So my note is just so how easy, you know, Wednesday says, I lie, and he lies so easily, like when he told Easter, oh, they killed Vulcan, even though he killed Vulcan. And I'm just so surprised by how Shadow is just kind of like still there. This guy is a total liar, untrustworthy. He's not obvious. I don't know. I just do not think he's trustworthy and I would want to be next to him or with him or following him or like not getting his, you know.
Yeah, well, the whole point of it is that he was brought to a place where he has nothing left to lose. And he's almost kind of nihilistic, you know. He's, what do you call it? Masochistic. Or what do you call it when you're self-destructive.
He's self-destructive. Yeah, but he keeps saying throughout the show, like, oh, yes, I did pledge to you, but, you know, I can always leave if this happens, piss me off and all that stuff. And I'm like, aren't you pissed off yet? Aren't you like, dude, man, you just killed a person and then told someone else that he was killed by someone else.
I love when he said,
but you're dealing with an old god. He's like, he knows what to do.
I'm so pissed off and, I can use this to get out of my contract. And Wednesday's like, what are you so pissed off about? And he's like, you chopped off your friend's head.
Yeah. And yet, you're that's not confused. Enough for me to take off
right.
somehow.
Yeah, he's a bit of a, I don't know.
Manipulative prick?
No, I'm talking about prick? Shadow. He's Shadow. You know, he's kind
His
of
actions
a,
are a little puzzling.
To me, he just seems, he's confused and aimless and... He's upset, but he's a little bit spineless sometimes.
And everyone is like really interested in him for some reason.
Right. And Matt Sweeney started to say he's nothing, but he's just the guy who happens to. And then he didn't really finish that thought. I'm like, what? Why?
Ah, this is a mystery.
I want there to be some reason. Even though you've said before, you know, a lot of times in these stories with gods, they just pick some random schmo, which makes sense. But I feel like I wish there was a reason that they, you know, why have they spent so much energy on him for the fall of this?
Well, that's going to be one of the mysteries. Just like, why is
Hopefully
Matt Sweeney,
it will be resolved.
Why is Matt Sweeney like, well, why does Easter have a favor owed to Matt Sweeney? And why did Matt Sweeney do Wednesday's bidding, et cetera?
We got so many little wonderful tidbits that we get. I feel like we get to chew over on this. If we were to go back and watch this whole thing, which I think is going to play out really well when you watch the entire season as a whole, little tidbits to think about and wait for and clues and mysteries. I can't wait.
I wonder if excited like the guy who played Chernabog, does he have a contract for next season? Is he going to be back? I hope so. You know, these people that we've met along the way, Poluchnaya or whatever her name is.
Well, we'll see, right? This seems like there's going to be a nice little reunion in Wisconsin, so we'll see who's there.
Right. My last note was just that the title, Come to Jesus, is a good title because it was a big Come to Jesus meeting in a couple different ways. All right. That's good. Let's take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. All right, we're back. One more Fracture ad for the road. What do you say, guys? Let's do it.
Do it.
Fracture is, do you not know what it is by now? It's your photos printed on glass in vivid color. If you're like me, taking a lot of pictures on your phone, then it's a shame to keep them all hidden away. Maybe like if you're like me, you do want to keep most of them hidden away or some of them hidden away. you know, the pictures I want, I don't necessarily want up are just, you know, they're just the lighting's bad or the person had a funny look on their face or it was crooked or whatever. But when I look through, I always see a few, sometimes a couple that are like, oh man, that's so good. And they turn out awesome. And the only time I see them is if I bother to flick back through my pictures and take a look. With Fracture, you can take a memory and turn it into a piece of art for everybody to enjoy all the time or, you know, whenever they're around it. And when you put it up on the wall or on your desk, it really changes a room big time. It makes a big difference. So I challenge you to look through your pictures and see if you don't find one that you'd like to have more visible, made into a Fracture so you can look at it and appreciate it. And if you do decide to get it done, it's super easy. You just go to their website and upload it and choose a size. And their software even warns you if the picture might be too low resolution for whatever size you choose. They really want you to be pleased with it. So they try to make it so that it's going to turn out great. And I'm sure you will be pleased with it because we've heard from a lot of listeners who've gotten these and they've all been happy with them. And we've all gotten them, everybody on this podcast.
Yep.
So if you want to get one, go to fractureme.com/podcast and choose American God Cast from their list of podcasts that they sponsor. You get 10% off if you're a first-time customer. That's fractureme.com/podcast. And I really want to thank Fracture for sponsoring this podcast.
Absolutely.
It's really cool of them. And throughout the first season of the show, we appreciate those guys. And I'm always proud to have them as a sponsor because I love what they do. All right, let's do some listener feedback.
All right. Our first one here is from Paik Allen. Feel a bit better about it after listening to the podcast over it, but I really wasn't that fond of
last
it personally.
Of course,
this is last week's episode. Yeah. The story was intriguing enough, but I felt like we did not need that much unrelated backstory with only one episode left this season now. Didn't do anything for the plot, and I wanted more of that. Kind of funny talking about this in this episode where I'm like, well,
here you go.
I feel a little more for Matt Sweeney at this point.
I bet you he's going to love this episode. But this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. Like, I don't feel this way if an episode really gives me a lot to chew on, even if it's a bit of a side trip. But to each his own. I'm curious to hear what you thought, Paik, of this episode. I'm thinking you might have liked it.
Keith E.B. Chago says, Mad Sweeney may not be a leprechaun, but an offshoot, which is a chloricon. A chloricon is said to always be drunk and are quite surly. If you treat them well, they will protect you and are good to you, but treat them bad and they will wreak havoc. Neil Gaiman has used the chloricon before in the Sandman series in its spinoff called Chloricon. As Chloricon, the character is tall and blonde, where Matt Sweeney is tall and ginger. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's a great character in Sandman. And also, a chloricon shows up in Wayward, the comic book I talked about that we cover on Under the Comic Covers. Last week, that's kind of like Buffy in Japan and has a little side trip in Ireland. There's a chloricon there as well. And they're also like, they tend to seduce young ladies and they're like horny leprechauns.
Yeah. I wonder if Neil Gaiman did have that in mind, but decided to make it a leprechaun because more people are familiar with them. And also it's sort of anti typecasting, funny, interesting to make leprechaun big and surly.
D, all of the above. Yeah. I agree. Yes.
Joy. I guess they could always have a running joke in which they're like, oh, so you're a leprechaun. He's like, a chloricon.
Yeah.
That could have been good too. Yeah.
Joy Sariano Kim says, loved hearing more about Mad Sweeney. Didn't like the music not matching the period. It kept throwing me off. So Laura is a descendant of S.E. McGowan? I'm not sure about that.
Possibly. I mean, it's possible. Yeah. But I think the main thing is that there is a resemblance.
Right. A very strong resemblance.
Okay. Next one here is from Mark Kirkman. The music in the show is always something that I love. Oh. being a music fan and a fan of music and film and TV shows, this made me happy. This approach to storytelling is always great for the viewer. The mesh between music and film always presents a story, gives a feeling, and the viewer knows what is going on.
I liked it. I mean, there have been movies where they do that, and it feels, I don't know, like they're trying too hard or something, but especially in this last episode, it just seemed to fit for some reason for me.
And I think I brought it up last episode. I did like the anachronistic feel of it being 17, 20, whatever, mm-hmm. or 30, whatever at that point, 40, the 40s. there was some kind of funny about having these 50s love songs of that to us sounds so innocent and mm-hmm. but at the same time at that point would seem racy. I mean, it's just, I think it's fun to play around with that. And also it has that feel like the old gods and the car that he drives, Wednesday drives, and all these kinds
Americana.
Of have that Americana, the road, Route 66. We talked about this in our first episode, right? The Midwestern road trip. It echoes all these things. And it is these ripples and echoes of this entire theme that I think we're getting throughout this entire series, whether it be Lucy. I mean, think about even all the references. They've been much older. Lucy, Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. Bowie's the most recent.
Yep. And he was probably alive when they wrote this. Sad. He's gone.
Not probably. Definitely.
He definitely was, yeah.
Yeah. So Steve Brown says, I'm doing better with separating the book from the TV show, especially now with the mention of the House on the Rock. I realize that things are moving at a different pace than the book. By the way, I love the section of the podcast where you compare the show to the book. It helps me better understand what is going on in both mediums.
Let's give it up to Jenny, because that's basically the Jenny segment.
Yeah, except for the fact that the book now is starting to recede into memory.
I know. You're going to have to read it again before next season.
I know.
Oh, shit.
And this last one comes from Paris Granville, who says, "Hello, thanks for turning me on to American Gods. I love the podcast. And Jason and Mr. Blog have to stop talking over Jenny. Please allow her to speak."
Thank you, Paris. Thank you, Paris. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, let's move on to the next section.
Shit, I'm sorry. I didn't realize we were doing that. Sorry, Jenny.
And the funny thing is you two edit, so I thought you guys might even edit that out, but I guess you did it.
I'll try to do better. Next is news about American Gods. So first, Ricky Whittle, who plays Shadow, talked to Deadline. He says, "I've got this career, which is my childhood dream, but I'm not from a good area," admits Whittle, who was born near Manchester, England, and comes from a UK military family. "I had to fight every day because I was a black kid in a white school, because I was an English kid in an Irish school, a soccer player in a rugby school, a Catholic in a Protestant school. This is all stuff I've been able to harness and kind of put into Shadow. So I really do kind of relate to his whole background of traveling around, never fitting in, always being kind of stood on and trodden on, and maintaining that hope that it doesn't matter, that I can keep getting up and moving forward." Just a little window into Ricky Whittle there.
Of course, now he's a British guy in America, where we love British
guys. Right. I mean, this is probably horrible, but this is the curse of being, I imagine, a really like good-looking, studly guy. Is people are like, "Whatever, you're an attractive guy. Stop whining." That's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, true. He is a very attractive guy, so it could have been even worse for him.
Yeah, yeah. but I would like to put that aside, because right. The reason why I put this in here is I just thought it was interesting that he had those experiences.
But
as
you know, when you have those experiences as a kid, and if you overcome them, you will be strong.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're saying we should
torture our kids?
Send
hell yeah.
Nico to some school that has
no
Asians.
We need to send him to an all-girl school.
Keep his hair long. Next, Neil Gaiman was talking to Variety. They said, "Stars renewed the show for a second season, but what happens when you run out of text to adapt?" He says, "By that time, one of two things will have happened. Either President Trump will have destroyed the world, or I will have written or be solidly into the American Gods sequel." So that's what he's hoping for, that second one that he's got.
I really hope that's the
one.
Outcome.
Yeah. Next, they said the show went into production before the election, but since it began its run in April, it has seized the cultural moment. Not really a question, but he replied, "I did not consider the book contentious, controversial, or anything fancy. It was a book that was fundamentally about the Statue of Liberty and the poem on her base, about what immigrants took to America and what they left behind, and it seemed like an absolutely and utterly uncontentious thing. Writing a story with a diverse cast seemed like an important thing." And they say, "What's been the most surprising reaction to the show?" He says, "Weirdly, it was the fact that the Bilquist scene caused as many ripples as it did. I remember making it up 20 years ago." You'd think he might expect some reaction to that, but "I remember making it up 20 years ago. I threw it at the end of chapter one, figuring if people wanted to leave, they could leave there. I was quite genuinely as excited by Yatidi Badaki's glorious performance, and then by watching that set the world on fire the next day."
Nice.
Wait, so that scene was more shocking than the gay Muslim sex?
Apparently.
He said that's been the most surprising reaction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or maybe whoever was turned off by that scene would not have made it to the...
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I'm pretty sure.
Is this an old interview?
No, I was just going to say, I'm pretty sure it came out after that, you know, that other episode aired. I'm not positive, okay. But I think so. These are all, you know, okay. From the last few days. All right, that's our show, episode 9. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you for joining me and Jenny for this, Mr. Blog. And thank you, Jenny, for joining me and Mr. Blog.
And thank you for joining me and Mr. Blog.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning, I've loved this experience. So thank you guys. And thank you all for listening.
Oh, this is it. This is it. Bye.
Well, for now.
For a while.
Bye, till next
I
year.
I mean, I want to thank the hardcore gaming fans, to everyone down the line, to those who are only watching because we got into the show, and the ones who stuck it out. And hopefully you all fell in love with it, or you've stopped watching and aren't listening right now if it just wasn't your thing. But I just want to thank all you guys for coming along on this with us. Also, subscribe to Stars for this show, and you haven't checked out Ash vs. Evil Dead yet, way different, but I recommend just at least watching the first episode and seeing if you like it. I love that so much, and I do a podcast about that, in case you didn't know, called Evil Dead Cast. You can search for it on Apple Podcasts or iTunes if you end up liking the show. But I've been a fan of Evil Dead since the 80s.
And I have not been a fan of Evil Dead. Every time I've watched it, as you know, before, I was just like, God, everyone loves this show, this movie, and it's okay. But I love the show. The show is just hilarious. Yeah. I don't know why.
It's a comedy.
Maybe it has to do with like the state of my psyche or of the world. Who knows? Or maybe it's because Walking Dead has become a so little grave. Bit dreary. Yeah. But Ash vs. Evil Dead is just fun.
Yeah, it's a burst of fun.
Oh, it really is. It's actually one of our favorite shows in our household.
So do you guys want to do this next time when they come back for season two?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure. All right.
Unless absolutely. You get a death threat, no, including me.
Oh, come on. Everyone loves you the
oh,
most.
Good gravy. No.
Stop
yes,
interrupting.
Exactly. No, I have to say this also. I swore up and down after doing a bit of Game of Thrones talk. With the podcast, I was saying I'm never going to do a podcast again based on something that's already out there,
you know. Yeah.
Whether it's A Song of Ice and Fire or The Walking Dead, or
based on another, like a novel, or
based
something.
On another source, right? If people get so, I don't want to say crazy, but fuck it, crazy about the source material that sometimes you feel you can never do right. Never, but for some reason with this, when this first came up with you and I and talking about doing this, I'm just like, no, I'm going to do this. That's cool. And I'm really, really glad it's panned out that Stars did a great job with the show. And that's the coolest thing with me. I really have enjoyed the show. I think it's been fantastic. And it's been fun with our different levels of knowledge regarding the source material, I think, as well. So, hell yeah, I want to do next season.
And I was teasing and joking around, but I really do. I'm glad you wanted to do this, Jenny, and it's been great. You're awesome on here. So
even though we have to hire a babysitter for this
one. But it's been really fun, and I've been podcasting for 7 years now, and this is the first one we've done together, and it's been great, and you've brought some really great stuff to it, so thank you.
Like this mimosa.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yay Jenny, loved it.
All right. If you guys want to get in touch with us, email us. We might do something in between, but at the very least, it sounds like we'll be back for season 2, episode 1, and we'll read some of your emails about the finale or whatever. So, or we'll write back too. We can write back. So you can email us at godpod@podcastica.com.
You can find us on the web at facebook.com/godpod.
And you can subscribe, rate, and review us in Apple Podcasts or iTunes by going to AmericanGodcast.com.
And if you just don't want to be without us at all, you could go to Podcastica.com, look at our other shows. Eric's on every week with Under the Comic Covers.
Every week.
I'm covering Fear the Walking Dead on Walking Dead Cast right now. And this season, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, this is actually a show I would recommend to people. So that's amazing.
I'd have to start watching.
Oh, it's picked up.
Yes.
I stopped watching. I really did. But
yeah. I can't. I don't know. I mean, I feel like if you are, I said this to somebody else, if you're like just not into it and you're coming to it going, all right, this better wow me, then you might still not love it. But so many people, all our listeners, are like, oh yeah, it's good. I mean, it's gotten really good. So I'm loving it right now. I like it better right now than the average episode of Walking Dead last season, actually. I forgot to mention it, but we're going to do another spoilery section, right? So if you don't want to hear that, hasta luego and goodbye.
Until next season. Or until something really cool happens and we just have to podcast about it because it's just amazing.
All right.
Spoilery.
Suck it to us.
So, okay, let's start from the, with the beginning. Bilquis. Right. So they've, you know, a lot of this episode was off book. So Bilquis, you know, has so, really been.
Oh, wow. I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah. I mean, like, we don't go to Tehran in 1979 at all. You know? With Bilquis, the story is very short. It's just the, the sex scene.
But I mean, the Easter part. Was that on book?
There is, they do meet Easter, but they meet her in LA. In a park,
and not with Jesus. Oh. Yeah, this and whole no Jesus thing.
Or at least not in the in the version of the book I read. I heard there's a 10th anniversary version where Jesus does show up.
Right,
and I don't have that, and I didn't read that one either.
But so Bilquis, you know, still being alive is different because she gets run over by a limousine, like halfway through the book, and that's it. It was basically part of the war between the Oghuz and Oghuz.
That may still happen.
Okay,
right. Possible. I mean,
yeah,
right?
that's true.
Spoilery section, so
that's true. Did she go to the Rock? She did go to House on the Rock. So okay. I think she gets run over after. So yeah, I think I spoiled quite a bit. But anyways, this is for people who've read the book.
Spoilery section.
but see, that's the thing. She was just like that one story, and then maybe like a cameo at House on the Rock, and then she gets run over. That's it. She's just kind of like a disposable old god in the book, mm-hmm. and here. She definitely has more of a role. Part. And given that Matt Sweeney like died in the book, he basically froze on the side of the was a dead frozen drunk at the side of the road because he lost his gold coin and is now on a road trip with Laura.
that's totally different.
Matt, so
Matt Sweeney has been expanded, Bilquis has been expanded, Laura has been expanded. Even Easter now has been expanded. You know, basically they're rewriting American Gods, or at least building on it, and I'm loving it.
Yeah,
I know.
It's much richer.
I wanted to say in the main part, and I forgot that it's really interesting that Laura and Mad Sweeney, I think they add a lot to the series. They're really fun to watch, but
and Salim, not Salim, too. That's totally new too.
They're kind of the backbone of it almost, especially these last few episodes, and they weren't that big a deal in the book, so that's interesting.
Yeah. I'm also going to have to, as I said, the book is already starting to fade into memory. I'm not sure if the war starts right now. The war may have started later in the book.
No, it's a little
later. I believe it starts later when the old gods themselves suffer a loss. I don't want to spoil too much.
Yeah, because I don't want to spoil
that. So it's interesting that it's starting now based on a new god being killed. So I thought that was different. And also right in front of Easter, which was not where the war started.
No, I think that was so much like, let's give them a bit of a cliffhanger for the finale.
Right. And Easter did not have a deal with the new gods and, you know, in the book. She was just sitting, I think, in LA and they came by and asked her to join the war. And she was like, okay.
What new god was killed?
Well, Mr. World, did it seem like he was at least injured? Because he was the faceless guy.
Yeah.
And then
he
fell down.
Oh,
and
I didn't.
And then he was starting to flicker in and out. I don't know if he's
he
dead
said
or not. It's hard
war,
to tell when a god has really died or not.
He said a war has started. You have your war now or something.
Yeah.
But he was still threatening him. I didn't even consider that.
I don't think Mr. World is. I saw Mr. World as just.
Injured.
No, I even just saw him as just filling in for that body just to show up. That he wasn't even really injured.
Okay.
I hope so.
Because he wasn't really there to begin with. I didn't, when you mentioned the new god, I thought Vulcan.
But then why did he say this is a sacrifice for you? Oh, I sacrificed a bunch of strange faceless minions?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, that doesn't seem like
he said, I'm
going to
kill these
people. That's enough for Easter
to
switch sides? Okay. All right, okay.
I don't know. That's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
I think it was also a matter of media. I think media was rubbing her nose in it the entire time that she's a sellout. And I think it was pissing her off. I mean, she got pissed off when Wednesday mentioned this is bullshit.
Right.
You know, She did not, and she called him out on that. You're like, basically, you called me out in front of the Jesuses. You know, it's like, yes, it's true. We all know that. Don't say that. You know, I think that was an embarrassment to her. And I think media rubbing her nose in it was what really got her to switch over. Not so much Wednesday, but that. I think she hated the fact that she, I think she's prideful.
Yeah, she doesn't like where she is. Vulcan obviously was quite happy where he was.
He loved made where his, he was. He made
yeah. She kept stance. Saying, I'm doing fine, but it was a bit, thou doth, you know, yeah. protest too much.
And I have to hand it, again, I got to say, Kristen Chenoweth, love that woman as an actress so much. And she's huge on the stage, and I think she brings her acting to that role because you can sense that tension in her that she didn't like where she was. And I think she really enjoyed cutting loose and sucking the life out of the land around her. Like, fuck you, make you're gonna pray to me, you know, old god style, and I got a kick out of that.
But I mean, how do we pray to our star? I think it had to do something with eggs, right? But I could be wrong.
Well,
because I do think some of the Easter traditions do come from ancient habits.
Yeah, well, rituals. It's all about fertility and fertility. Birth.
It's
so
sex. It's giving birth.
All about
yeah.
that. Right. Yeah.
They just don't like the General Mills version of old rituals.
It's the Lucky Charms of sex.
Anyways, okay.
All right, great. So we will see all you all in hopefully a year and not longer than that. We don't know when it's coming back, but we'll see you next season. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.